Mini episode 671 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at pullinsgroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, next category in the Pantheon, Pantheon 9. This is the sports blog. This is another vacated category. I have to say, as much as I greatly appreciated the FDH Lounge dignitaries and members of the Academy of Arts and Sciences who voted for the FDHLounge.com as the best sports blog.
I did not.
Thank you. I also felt enormously silly having to put that in our list of results on the front page, and I think I even put a disclaimer down there about some over-enthusiastic people there. I appreciate the general spirit, but...
Is that payola or plugola? I don't know the difference here.
I was sitting there, I'm going... This is not going to happen, right? This is not going to happen, and it did happen, and yeah. So I fortunately I didn't have any problems convincing people to purge this and then make it as an ineligible one. I think this is our last purge category here, actually. Musical act. Yeah, we're going to have that subsequently. That one was purged as well, and we'll get to that. Somebody tried to vote for one of the purged acts, and he had to be slapped about the face a few times. But for best sports blog. The ones that we have
here. Did
you
really slap him?
Well, it was long distance. So, we have some interesting votes in this category here. We have one vote that actually I don't really know what to make of here. And I guess I'll just ask you, Matt Patrone. You just put Life's a Pitch, which, of course, is the old webcast of our good friend Ken Detweiler that I used to be sidekick on. He's bringing it back as a podcast. To my knowledge, it's never existed as a sports blog. Can you enlighten me?
I don't know sports blogs, so I just threw something out there.
Okay.
So on that note, I'm sure
Ken is honored.
Right, but okay. I'm going to excuse myself from this category because I do not listen to sports blogs. So I have no...
They don't listen to you either, man.
Right.
So, okay, so all right. So, fair enough. The single votes in this category, a little surprised I was the only vote for MMQB, Peter King's weekly football blog on the Sports Illustrated website, but we did have some other football-oriented votes that came in here. I don't know, should I have been surprised by that, Tony? I might have thought there might have been at least one other one.
Maybe.
It's got some good stuff.
Yeah, I like it. I think when people think of sport, because I think because they look at it as a part of Sports Illustrated.
Okay.
So it's kind of that, like, oh, you know.
Corporate, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm sick of big sports blogs, man.
I considered casting a vote for MMQB. Mm-hmm. I stayed away from it only because it being one sports-centric.
Okay.
And I was trying to, you know, there are a lot of great blogs out there that are focused on one sport or one team.
Right.
And part of my feeling was, you know, there could be some great blog out there, you know, buried out there that somebody's toiling away and doing some really great stuff about Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. I've never read it or seen it.
Right.
So there's a lot of those. So I tried to come up with, you know, okay, what's covering sports, the world of sports, athletes, you know, all sports,
okay,
you know, whatever you want to.
Well, I mean, and that's a good way of looking at it, I think. There were different ways of viewing this here from different people. We even had a legacy vote here. Ben Chu voting for a blog that is out of business, but where you can read all the archives, voting for Grantland. And that was certainly a great one. And you talk about, Tony, as something that's an arm of a bigger sports empire, in this case, Espen here, and subsequently cast aside when Bill Simmons flew the coop there. But I might have given more thought to that one if it were still around. I mean, that was one that I used to love reading multiple times a week, and guys like Bill Barnwell and all the stuff on there.
Jonah Carey, yeah.
Jonah Carey.
There's a lot of good stuff on there and good long-form reading. The problem is nowadays, it's just unfortunate because I think a lot of the people who really enjoyed Grantland were people who do like the long form, but it's the minority.
Yeah.
With the way the internet is with social media, people just want a quick Vine video, or they want a GIF, or they want a meme.
Pearls before swine.
140 characters.
140 characters.
You know, yeah. They don't want the article that you've got to spend 17 minutes reading. But I think, and if I recall, Rick, was my previous vote for Grantland? I think it was.
It might have been. It might have been. You ended up casting a more successful vote this time around vis-a-vis winning categories. But,
and I hate my vote.
I hate it.
I felt awful and dirty when I casted it.
I think that
I
one
really did.
I don't want to be, and Johnny could tell me, Johnny's the authority on us. Johnny could tell me if I'm being hipster guy, but like I think they jumped the shark when Will Leach left. Am I hipster guy for talking? It hasn't been any good since
I agree
time.
With you. One of the reasons I hate my pick.
Oh, okay.
I think you did pick the Houston Texans to win the Super Bowl this year. So, yes, I think you are the hipster.
That was like 2 years ago, but yeah. A very good vote. You talk about quality stuff here, and you talk about something that is a deep dig for people who love deep digs. This vote that my man Kyle Ross, pro football handicapper, cast for Football Outsiders. That's one of the ones, Tony, that when you're talking about like Grantland, and I think, didn't Barnwell come from there, I think?
I think so, yeah.
That's another one of those ones, too, where, again, single sport, but I mean, you know, you go into their bunch of data, and that's about as good as it gets for breaking it down.
Well, that's for a lot of football nerds that want to get something a little, digging a little deeper outside the surface than the, you know, same regurgitated groupthink garbage that's been on a lot of these websites.
Mm-hmm.
That basically they take one article and they just say, so-and-so posted this. Mm-hmm. What's the point? They already posted it.
It's an amazing site, and every week as I'm doing my NFL breakdowns of the games with Kyle, he's always using a lot of stuff because, again, this for a guy who's a professional handicapper, that's a big part of his day job is going into stuff like this and finding those kinds of nuggets. And it is quality, Chris, but, again, it's one of those things of, again, as I said before, pearls before swine. For people that just want the quick and easy stuff, entertaining, whatever, it ain't for them. If you love football and you want to know more about it, Football Outsiders has got it all.
Well, I agree. It really does. And but if you're a casual fan, it's not going to be a site for you.
No.
And that's why it's never going to have, you know, commercial success in terms of being a mainstream corner of the internet.
That's right. I would agree with that. Along similar lines, maybe, but maybe a little bit lighter in tone, is the next vote, Ron Glasnap casting one for MLB Trade Rumors. It's a good place to, you know, particularly in July, you go there, you want to see what's happening, what's the buzz. They got all of that stuff. Nate Noy going for Roto Grinders, which caters in large part increasingly to the daily fantasy sports player, and Nate is a big proponent of that industry, so that's an interesting one.
I could make a joke right there, but I'm...
Yeah, it does kind of lend itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Tom Denk casting one for the 1983 Fleer Autograph Project. That's certainly a very eclectic vote. I would expect nothing less from Denker. Uniwatch was the one that Steve Cervillo went for. Pro Football Talk from Dave Adams, a good vote there. And that sums up all the individual votes except at the I'm looking to see here at the table. Okay. One more individual vote here at the table. Tony, you voted for Busted Coverage.
Yes.
That's a good one. That's definitely entertaining.
It's entertaining because it's basically the TMZ mm-hmm. of sports, but they make no bones about it, though.
Right.
I forgot who the guy is. He's like from Dayton or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's basically the one following Johnny Manziel everywhere he goes. And we want your Johnny Manziel pictures. Did you see him play pool? Did you see him snort cocaine? Did you see him do this? Send him along. Pass him along to Busted Coverage. And they really just, like I said, they make no bones about who they are. And I'm like, you know what, I kind of do respect that in a way and with the way the internet is now.
Yeah, they should definitely be represented in something like this. There's no question about it. We go to there were only two of these ones that received more than one vote. Waiting for Next Year, a local Cleveland sports blog, for those of you listening outside of the area here. They do a very good job at covering the Cleveland sports teams. Original FDH Lounge dignitary Tim Faust, along with Mike Petak, our motorsports editor, along with Anthony Patrone. So, Anthony, thoughts behind Waiting for Next Year? I know that, among other things, they have hosted on there a podcast with our old friend from the station, Joe Wall, so there's been that. Tony, have you been on their podcast as well?
Yes, I have.
You have? Okay, great. That's... I gotta check that out. When were you on there?
September, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Sweet.
It wasn't
I gotta check
great.
That out. and they didn't
I
even
sucked.
Get your vote, interestingly enough. Did it have anything to do with your dissatisfaction with how that went?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, just lob the bombs over. Why not?
Anthony, why'd you vote for it?
My vote for them is I read a lot of blogs. The producer in me still wants to read everything, still wants to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I come back to Waiting for Next Year. It's the one I find myself reading the most. It's
okay.
The one I always, you know, when I click, I end up there. So.
Okay. Yeah, they got a lot of good stuff. I find myself going to it almost every day to read Cleveland sports stuff. The winner in this category is Deadspin. We alluded to it before. Alex Slemp, the Joneses, Jason and Samantha, voting for it, as did Bob Glassman, as did Chris Galloway. Chris, you did not put it over the top. You at least can live with that. It was going to win anyways. It's a 5-3 margin here, but so you don't have to carry that burden.
I'm glad, because I have a lot of burdens, and this was not one I wanted weighing down my soul.
It was great for like 5 years anyways. You're not wrong.
And
in
that's
that
why I put it in, because I went with its greatest time.
It was an innovator.
And they did, you know, unlike a lot of these blogs, you know, like Bleacher Report has become like an aggregator. Lots of links to lots of other blogs and just other stories that other people are doing. I mean, there's too much of that. Deadspin did a lot of original material, you know. Didn't Deadspin do the Brett Favre dick pics? And,
I think so.
You know, you name it, all kinds of stuff. Up
a fine
and down.
Moment in journalism.
Yeah, right. I mean, just lots of, just all kinds of silly stuff. But there was a lot of original material in there. And they were never afraid to, you know, take on the leagues. Challenge them on some of their stupidity. And so from that standpoint, not Deadspin today, but Deadspin at its height and what it originally was, I think earns its way in.
I could kind of get behind that, yeah. I mean, to me, I just kind of can't get the stink off of it, of how it's been living off its reputation the last couple of years and really turned into a self-parody. But, yeah, I mean, when you're talking about that at its peak,
they're constant battle with ESPN.
That's the one thing they still do well.
I mean, yeah. they earn their way in. Name another blog that's been able to get under the skin of the mothership in Connecticut the way they have.
I can't think of one.
I mean, everyone else kowtows, and, you know, looking for access or any other thing. They've stuck it in their eye constantly.
Right.
And so I think based on that, they should get in.
The big lead goes after them, but I don't think they cause nearly as much heartburn. I don't think anybody does outside of Deadspin, so... I'll give it to you on that. Even if the hipster in me wants to say, you know, that's so 2009. Well, hey, 2005 to 2009, they were pretty damn great. So in honor of that, we lift the Dundee Award. We have a worthy successor, at least if you look at Deadspin as its peak, to the FDH Lounge, which I am happy is now out of the discussion for sports blog here. That's the last kind of stench of homerism that we need for anything like that. And
you know, the first person who turned me on to Deadspin was Good People Paul Teeple.
Yes, I remember
he
that
was
at
the first
station.
One who got me into it, and then the problem I had with it was when Gawker took it over and that
right.
whole site, and then they just started. It was like, okay, if you're going to do stuff on Ferguson or whatever, leave that to Gawker. You have another site for this.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were the ones that would do that, stick to sports. But
right.
then they wouldn't abide by their own rules. And that's
right.
when I start attacking them on Twitter and everything, and having their writers just get pissed off at me. And it's like, dude, you're a sports blog. You're posting pictures of Brett Favre Schwantz on there, yet you're trying to be this journalistic, bastion. Come on. I couldn't stand it.
Well, and that's the thing, too. You know, and that was a time when we were doing our shows at STN, where it was really, really interesting time, because Teeple was one of the ones that kind of got his hands around that in terms of that was like a vital part of show prep for everybody, not just Deadspin, but then you start kind of expanding it from there, awful
yeah.
announcing and whatever. And
Deadspin served a purpose before Twitter.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
Before Twitter and Facebook kind of became the new, like, kind of the new newspaper.
Well, and it's funny, too, because it's just such a generational thing, because one of my friends who had also been doing a show on there from New York, Steve Callis, a little bit of an older gentleman. I mean, not like super old, but a little older than any of us. And it's a thing where he just always agonizes over like when, show prep and whatever. And it's like, I don't have the attitude that he does on that, because I'm always prepared on stuff, but I can do it in like a fraction of the time it takes him. He doesn't, you know, he can't get the mentality of like you go to a, you know, maybe Deadspin's not the greatest example anymore, but Awful Announcing and some other places. You go here, you go there, you look at a few things. If you're looking for topics for the day, you can find it. You can find people's takes on it. It's pretty simple. And it's one of those things where just generationally, if you kind of came up, you know, before all of that, and this is what you have to do to prepare for a game, and you got to go through box scores and, you know, watch much of the footage of games and stuff like that. You know, the stuff you're talking about with Teeple plus or minus circa 2006, it really kind of changed the game.
These darn millennials, I tell you. Kids these days and their internet and their rap music.
There's nothing better than hearing millennials get denounced by Ben Chu, who I'm like, Ben, you're like, what, 27, 28?
Yeah,
you know?
He's about my age, yeah.
Yeah.
I denounce him, too. It's one of those, because how I feel as a millennial, or how, like, the Gen X that was born in, like, 1965 feels about the rest of the me 1980s Pepsi generation.
We hate you.
Exactly. I know.
Well, this
Trust
is
me,
one of
I
the
know.
Things, too, and I've always said this, and this is a hell of a burden to put on anybody. But, like, when I got to know you in the early days at the station there, it was one of these things of, like, I feel like in a lot of ways, and for those who've known me a long time, Chris and Johnny the longest, like, there's not a lot of difference between, you know, Rick Morris then and Rick Morris now, for better or for worse. Yeah. But I was like,
absolutely,
my God.
Not.
Yeah, very little. But I was like, my God, this is almost like, and this is how egotistical I am that I like you. It's like, this is like talking to a younger Rick Morris. It's like, this guy, like, looks at all these things, like, the same way. How's because it? I'm the same way of, like, I hate my generation. Like, Generation X, like, when I got out of school and everything, I'm like, I was just giving the middle finger to, like, everybody, you whiny assholes who just, you know what I mean, think the world owes you a living. And it's just like, that's the mark, I think, of true character, is loathing your own generation.
Absolutely.
It really is.
You have something to add?
I loathe all generations.
Yeah. Well, we all kind of, you know, particularly compared to, like, the World War II generation. Let's be honest. Like, we all kind of suck compared to them. We should just be honest enough to say that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, but I would also argue that circumstances made them the greatest generation. A long way.
Granted.
We, you know, who do we think of as our greatest presidents? Ones that had to deal with traumatic situations and were able to succeed.
You're right.
You know, no one's out there screaming, you know, Calvin Coolidge was the greatest president ever. He might have actually been.
He was my vote in the Pantheon for best president.
Yeah, I was going to say, Pantheon 10, we should do underappreciated generations.
Yeah, underappreciated generations. Well, and of course,
are there any of them that should win, though? I mean,
my great book that I've had rattling around in my head for several years now is I'd like to write the book about the baby boomers and just call the book The Worst Generation. Because there hasn't been a generation that's been so self-centered, so hypocritical, and ruined so many things for future generations as the baby boomers.
That is true. Yeah. Like, we as Gen Xers, Tony as a millennial, like, we can feel good about ourselves compared to them. You know, at least we're not the baby boomers.
They are horrible as a generation.
We're going to make America great again.
Yes. in all ways possible, yes. So the sports blog goes to Deadspin, best sports blog in the Pantheon. Now it's NFL offensive linemen, and here we start to get a little bit more clumping up in the categories. We only got a handful of votes for one candidate. Most of these, I say most of these, were pretty quality. Ben Chu voting for Gene Upshaw. You got to respect that one. A great old school vote there. Tom Rafferty was the vote for Scott Pullins. Again, if you're going to go back a little ways and look at that, I think old Skeeter got that vote pretty good.
I love that song he did, Baker Street. That was great.
I prefer the Maynard Ferguson version myself. I'm a big MF Horn guy. Kyle Ross with a quality vote. I would expect nothing less from such a quintessential football man as him. John Hannes, good old school vote there. Russ Cohen, Jets fan, voting for DeBrickashaw Ferguson. I'm just going to let that float in the ether. Samantha Jones with the joke vote of Anthony Castonzo, a vote that never should have been cast.
I'll
but okay,
leave that alone.
Well, if you're gonna cast a protest vote, Chris showed how to do it in a subsequent category. We'll get to that. Samantha didn't even make me laugh with hers. Tony voted for Orlando Pace,
yes.
a good vote there. A guy who was, I think he was the first pick in the draft overall when he came out, was he not?
I think so. It was 96,
out of Ohio State,
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, went to, he was with the, well, then St. Louis, because they had just moved over from the Los Angeles Rams.
Yep.
And Pace, yeah, he was. I think he's on the Hall of Fame ballot. But
yes.
He was, for a long time, just, you didn't want to mess with him. of course, probably in his later years, just like most offensive linemen, they live on reputation.
Right.
But he had such a solid stretch. The problem was, for those first few years, he played some garbage Rams teams.
He did.
And then ended up being the anchor of that greatest show on turf.
Yeah, yeah. He was a hell of a player. And he's the guy, I think, where I can really kind of defend this vote is, didn't he sort of anybody else more so become synonymous with the term of pancaking?
Yes.
Didn't that get to be big with him? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he was like the first when you were starting to do those, come on, man. ESPN, they would go, look at this block from Orlando Pace. He sends this guy right on his tuchus and whatever.
Yeah, and that's, it's the sign of a quality vote. I know somebody like my dad would be very happy as a graduate of Ohio State that he is represented here. So Orlando Pace is a good vote. We get to some of the ones here subsequently. Two votes, and this is good old school stuff here. Two votes for Forrest Gregg. I can definitely defend that. Somebody who got three votes who, when these came in, two of them came in early from the same family, no less. But I was a little bit scared that this guy was going to win because I didn't think this would be a very credible winner. But Anthony and Matt voted for Joe Thomas along with Jason Jones.
A little bit scared. Why? A man who's been to a Pro Bowl every year of his career on a crappy team?
But, like, greatest of all time for a guy whose career isn't even done yet?
A man who's been to a Pro Bowl every year of his career on a crappy team.
Okay.
And to me, that describes greatness.
Okay.
If you can get to a Pro Bowl every year straight up, and the rest of the team around you does nothing, mm-hmm. and the whole rest of your line sucked, but yet they still notice you to put you in a Pro Bowl, that's greatness.
It's not, to me, a Nolan Ryan vote. I wouldn't go that far, but it's one that I don't really agree with.
That's greatness.
You can make a case for it, and you just did. I mean, I don't think it's a joke vote, but it's just one I don't really agree with. I mean, you got anything else on that, man?
And like you said, his career isn't done yet, so what else can he do?
But that's not part of this, though. That's not like, boy, and in the year 2018,
true.
That guy is going to go to five
true.
Pro Bowls.
Okay, true. Barkley.
So, yeah. So.
But, no, I'm just saying based on what he's done.
Okay.
I mean, and sitting around this table, the majority of us have paid attention to the Browns.
We've all seen Joe Thomas a lot. He's a great player.
And he's been around garbage.
Yeah, he has. Most of his career. Ironically, not the first year. They went 10-6, and he probably thought, boy, it's going to be nothing but blue skies and Palomino ponies. You know, boy, did he get that one wrong.
I love the Joe Thomas vote for only one reason.
Why?
And that is to go back several, many years now and revisiting a, I don't know if it
was. Are you going to throw back at me something I said?
No, I'm going to throw back something at that Jason said. Jason and I, way back back in the radio days, back at the station, we had an entire debate as to who was going to be the better pro, and I steadfastly believe that that Thomas would be, and he said Jake Long was going to be the better left tackle.
Well, isn't that funny?
Go back in the archives and find that.
I'm gonna have to because Jason voted for Joe Thomas. Oh, in fact, you know what? I know what it was. That was one of Jason's classic things of when the Browns took him. He's like, well, let me look at this again. And then it was like, okay, on second thought, I do agree with them. That was one of Jason's classic reevaluations. Three votes for him. Along with three votes for somebody that I voted for, Bruce Matthews, as one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time, or in my estimation, the greatest. And this is somebody that, again, has been able to play multiple positions, the brother of Cleveland's own Clay Matthews. But myself and Johnny, among the three votes for him, along with actually in your brother Dave being the third one here. So, hey, once again, a family repping the same guy. But so it doesn't just happen for Joe Thomas. But, again, Bruce Matthews, a guy more so, if I remember correctly, back around the turn of the century, but a great player, and certainly I agree with your vote.
Well, 292 games started over an 18-year career, 14 Pro Bowls. And speaking of being a great player on a poor team, I mean, that says it all right there. So,
an amazing player. Yeah, and those Tennessee offensive lines were really renowned, and again, he was a big part of it. And I think even going back to the Houston days, was he not? He was not with them.
Oh yeah,
going back to when it was the Oilers, and a long-standing career. The man had longevity, but he did not win this. The winning votes here, six votes in this category, the most of any yet today, at least on the first ballot, went to Anthony Munoz, and he collected a nice kind of cross section as we went along here. And It was very, very interesting. Again, he kind of rallied as we went along a little bit later here. And I see also another vote. I'm sorry, Chris, I overlooked this one here. You voted for Mike Webster as well. So that was one that was in there also.
I did, because I suspected Munoz would win.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want this. I wasn't looking to be contrarian. But I knew most of our votes would sort of gravitate towards left tackles.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of offensive line, you know, I think of center. It starts with center. You're touching the ball on every play. You're calling out the formations in terms of the defense and who's covering one in most the way most teams, play center within the NFL. Mike Webster, 9-time Pro Bowl selection, 9-time All-Pro selection, 4 Super Bowl rings of Pro Football Hall of Fame, playing, I think, what is probably the toughest position on the offensive line, not left tackle,
mm-hmm.
and doing it so well for all those years. His jersey has been retired. So as a Browns fan, obviously it pains me to nominate a Steeler, but when I think of an offensive lineman who led a 4-time Super Bowl champion, helped make Terry Bradshaw look a hell of a lot better than he was, and dominated his position for so long, went to so many Pro Bowls, Mike Webster got my vote.
And in a sad irony, at this time when the concussion movie is out, I think he actually plays into that a little bit, does he not? Because he was one of those cases of a guy that had the CTE.
I think he was the first person diagnosed with the CTE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, he died at age 50 of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so, tragic ending for a guy who really was deserving of a lot more accolades.
Great player, yeah. I mean, like you said, he played for Pittsburgh, but, I mean, I can't come close to denying that either.
Thomas went to the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and when you look at this again, as you said, the center position, I mean, if most people figure left tackle is most important, most people would then figure center is no worse than second most important. So, yeah, center has an awful lot of things here. People tend to gravitate towards, well, left tackle, all things considered, defends the blind side of the quarterback. That's assuming, of course, it's a right-handed quarterback. But
Also, center usually has to be is usually the smartest guy in the line because he is calling the coverages.
That's right.
And that's why I think you see so many centers end up as coaches.
That's right.
Successful coaches. A lot like you see in baseball, some of the best managers are catchers.
Catchers, yeah.
The smartest guy on the field, center and a catcher. So that's why Mike Webster got my vote.
Well, and defensively, middle linebackers making the best coaches here. Mike Singletary. Oh. Wait a minute, bad example.
Oops.
Yeah, whoops. I'm sure there's another one that comes to mind. But, yeah, Webster is a great call. Anthony Munoz did not receive votes from anybody here at the table, so there's nobody to speak for him. But he received 6 votes. Again, our most dominating showing on the first ballot thus far. Most of us sitting here, I think, have a decent memory of him back in the days of the Browns-Bengals rivalry and what he was able to do for those Bengals teams of the 80s. And he's certainly one of the more famous offensive linemen out there as far as his career, as far as what he accomplished. So in terms of name recognition, I'm not surprised that he won this, but this doesn't mean that I can dog it either, because you can certainly justify it based on his career, based on his contributions to those Bengals teams that went to 2 Super Bowls. So anybody got any thoughts on Mr. Munoz?
I think it's a great pick. I mean, when you think offensive lineman, he comes to a lot of people's minds first off.
And that mustache.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
That was a righteous stash. He was giving Tom Selleck a run for the best one of the 80s. But whether or not he had the best mustache of the 80s, he does now have the sanction in the FDH Lounge Pantheon as the best NFL offensive lineman of all time. We salute you, Anthony Munoz.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Timeout.
Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.